Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and we begin this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to get into the chat room. Folks are already wandering in over there. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, M. Brandt. Good evening, Texas D. and Todd and Truth Seeker. And good evening to indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, back from his weekend away, refreshed. Hi, Sparky. Come on by the chat room. It's free, you know. It's easy to access. I think you'll have a darn good time if you do. Yes, indeed. Also at headonradionetwork.com, our ever-present handy-dandy listen live button pop-out player. Quite useful. Yes. And, of course, also at headonradionetwork.com. Sorry, doing multitasking here. You'll find the ever-present PayPal button. We try to raise about $150 per evening. And we went a long way last night toward, thanks to Greg's More In Monday challenge. Thank you, Greg, and to everyone who responded. We went a long way to filling in the gaps from last week's deficit. Not quite there, but close enough. Thank you, Randy, loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac. Much appreciated. Oh, goodness me. We need 15 folks at 10 bucks a piece this evening, and or any combination thereof, 10, 15, 15, 3 at 52 at 75. Oh, 6 at 25, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later so that I can shut up about all of this and we can just deal with the titanic intellect that is the right wing in this country. And you know, we kind of focus on the right wing on Titanic Tuesday, but every now and then there's an opportunity, and who knows, one may crop up this evening for more titanic intellect that ain't necessarily from the right wing. We'll just have to see how things play out. Pardon for the periodic pauses that you could drive a truck through. Never mind the shtick last night with the sneezing fits. I really am having sneezing fits. Whatever it is that's blooming right now that's driving me crazy, I kind of wish it would stop. Because, Randy says, mention the new phone number. I will when we open the phone lines. I absolutely will. But it is Titanic Tuesday. Remember, the name of Titanic Tuesday comes from the 962nd tier right-wing blatherer over in Beckley. Sadly, no longer on the air, I think. I think he was replaced by Fox TV Radio Rwanda genius Andrea Tanteros. He's gone. We're still here. The 962nd tier right-wing blatherskate over in Beckley, who, fielding a call one day from his not a multitude of right-wing, not intellectuals, Atne Ute Aikbre, if you one what I in me, was asked, how come is it that there's them clamfish fossils in them rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the ocean. To which he responded, caller, that's a result of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yes. And hence, Titanic Tuesday, via our buddy Jim, was born. interestingly, I love science stories from every now and then. I saw a science story the other day that showed photos of one of Jupiter's moons have been analyzed, showing that there may be tectonic, of course that's the word we're looking for, tectonic movement on that said frozen moon. Which led me to wonder if there are right-wingers there, because I think there are also hydrocarbons on that moon, and wherever hydrocarbons are, there's some right-winger that wants to huff them, or mine them, or drill them, or well them, or burn them, or, if we just put some, they could probably melt that moon in no time flat, maybe have a nice, nice, pleasant little place to live, far, far, far away from the ordinary, normal people like us. But no, it really is Titanic Tuesday on the horn, and there is just by way of getting started. Do you remember? Maybe it was a prayer meeting Wednesday a month or so ago, but there was some evangelist, some member of the right wing religion industry, who said or who speculated, perhaps is a better word. That Ebola might be God's little plan to wipe out the homosexuals. And that Ebola might not be all bad, therefore. Apparently, the Republican majority, oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, I forgot that part. The Republican majority in the House of Representatives is in agreement. It's hard to get away from that. What do I mean? Well, here's what I mean. Jesus God. According to the Hill blog, a publication in D.C. that follows the actions of this wacky, zany Congress, negotiations are ongoing regarding spending limits and spending legislation for the government. As part of that, the White House, the Obama administration, has delivered a proposed bill to the House, and remember, constitutionally, the House has the purse strings. The Senate gets the highfalutin stuff like approving Supreme Court justices and treaties and the like, and the House gets to deal with the mundane business of funding government. Unfortunately, this House of Representatives is filled with Vandals and Visigoths. And so, hordes, I tell you. Barbarians, not at the gate, but, inside the walls. So the Obama administration sends a bill to the House asking for a little bit of money to help contain Ebola. it is of course it has of course reached monstrous proportions in Western Africa among the nations there. I always try to say something like that to show that, unlike a right winger, I don't think Africa is a country. I recognize that it is a continent. The Obama administration asked for $88 million to try to contain the virus outbreak and eventually, hopefully put it to bed. Kill it. Put it in the ground. Eliminate it. Or at least come up with a viable vaccine for it that can be administered. And, you know, that's one of those things that's to our own good because it is a much smaller world than once upon a time it was. And do let's remember that back when the world was big and before the half of the planet had even been discovered, you know, by white Europeans. I mean, there are other folks who had discovered it several thousand years before. But, you know, it only counts as a discovery if some white guy does it. Before this world became so small, some flea-bitten rats were able to wipe out about a third of the world's population. And that's when transport was either by hoof, by horse or camelback, or by ship. Imagine how much faster one can travel now via aircraft. Well, like I said, apparently the Republican Party in the House of Representatives is in agreement with that weirdo from the religion industry who thinks that Ebola might be a good thing for America. Wipe out the homosexuals and the liberals and all them other people that's ruining our godly country, where you can't even say the pledge to Jesus anymore in school, and that's why our cheerings aren't learning. Yeah, inside the House Appropriations Committee, well, the chair of that committee, and this story has a special resonance for me, because the chair of the House Appropriations Committee, which is quite arguably the single most powerful committee inside the House of Representatives, insofar as it does all the appropriating, the chair of the House Appropriations Committee is none other than Hal Rogers, a Republican from Kentucky. Hal Rogers, by the way, swaps time from year to year with my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal, in a bottomless race to the cellar to see who can represent the single most physically ill congressional district in the United States. Either the West Virginia 1st, or what is he, the Kentucky 5th? Yeah. And, of course, both men represent districts that are absolutely scourged, plagued with, come on, everybody, mountaintop removal coal extraction. In which microfine particles of blasting dust and silica and very waft down over mountain communities and are carried aloft on the winds for God knows how far, where they are breathed by innocent people, including pregnant mommies, for instance, inside whom the dust then transits the placental barrier so that it can wreak havoc upon the life of an unborn child and not just the woman breathing the stuff. Yeah, that's Hal Rogers' district. That's Nick Rahal's district. And so there's no small amount of irony involved in the fact that Hal Rogers figures that, well, that there Ebola, it's in Africa, and I ain't never done nothing about how sick my district is. Why in the hell would I want to do anything about how sick countries in Africa are? Hell, that's a long way away, Africa is. See what I mean? No, the Obama administration wanted $40 million I mean, wanted $88 million. 88? Hitler! Oh, God. Note to the Secretary of Jesus, Barack! Don't ever send anything asking for 88 of anything to the House of Representatives, please. But no, really, the Obama administration. You know who else wore tan suits? Mm-hmm. The Obama administration politely asked for $88 million, which probably means they needed $150 million, but we wouldn't want to get that serious about countries in West Africa and Ebola. Sneezing fit number two. But anyway, they asked for $88 million. And Hal Rogers and the Appropriating Committee said, well, we know how you people are, Obama. We give you $88 million, you're probably just going to go out and spend it on hammocks, ain't you? Give all of those people over there hammocks to have their Ebola in. Probably teach them Common Core and get them all excited about Agenda 21 and Benghazi! Really? But, I mean, it's the KKK. I mean, Repiglican Party. What do you expect them to do? I guess the Obama administration better be damned well glad they got the 40. Of the 40, $25 million, according to The Hill, is going to go to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And the other $15 million will go to the Biological Advanced Research and Development Authority, BARDA. The purpose of the $15 million is going to be to speed up research and development and production on an experimental anti-Ebola drug, which does apparently seem to work if the white doctors who have been spirited out of the region in order to keep them from dying of Ebola are any indication. Now, originally, the Obama administration had asked for $58 million for BARDA. They're getting 15. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, BARDA, in particular, their job is to deal with public health and medical consequences of chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear accidents, incidents, and attacks, pandemic influenza, and emerging infectious diseases. I think Ebola would fall under that last part, the emerging infectious diseases part. Mm-hmm. But, no. Hal Rogers, and how can you blame him? If Hal Rogers doesn't give enough of a damn about his own constituents to do something about an industrial process hanging over their heads, which is poisoning and killing them, then why should he care about a bunch of nameless, faceless, blah poors over in West Africa? Except for the fact that, and, you know, I'm of a certain age, so please forgive me. Every time I see a report on some disease process or something in the world that cites to the World Health Organization, it'll say, the WHO? Really? Pete Townsend? Roger Daltrey? They're into that now? No. According to the World Health Organization, who does not just throw words around, they understand being, the World Health Organization has a whole lot of scientists in it. Not sciencey people, but scientists. And the word they use in describing the spread of Ebola in the general region of West Africa is exponential. Ebola is spreading exponentially. And it's beginning to have rather profound impacts. It's going to affect the ability of an already highly stressed area to produce food for itself. God's will. So, not only is disease, you know, the four horsemen, not only is disease riding through the land, but the pale horse, whose name is death, is riding through the land, and that other horse called famine is off to a jolly canter as well. Half of those infected by Ebola have thus far been dying. 3,600 thus far, according to the World Health Organization. 3,600 infected, 2,000 dead. Well, that's more than half, isn't it? At this point in time, the World Health Organization says that it expects... Time out. It expects that 20,000 human beings, 20,000 people who were working for their daily bread, 20,000 mothers, 20,000 fathers, 20,000 sons, daughters, cousins, aunts, uncles, villages, 20,000 human beings will get Ebola before this thing begins to abate, if it's just left to run as it apparently is going to run. Meanwhile, Hal Rogers. Well, he's worried about America's money. I mean, he's a Republican, so that means he has to be concerned. He has to be a fiscal conservative. But have you ever run across a better example of robbing Peter to pay Paul? I ain't talking about Peter and Paul, dammit. I'm talking about that one in the White House with a goddamn tan suit and his hand all the time out, shiftless. But this is that. How much will it cost the United States if somebody just happens to say, wander by with Ebola? And because somebody hugs somebody or sneezes at somebody or however it is you have to do to transmit this stuff, I'm guessing that the United States, the citizens of the United States, are not so really, really terribly intelligent that we can just say, stop Ebola, quit that. You just go on now. We don't want you here. Go on. I said, shoot. I'm guessing that'll be a little pricey. But Hal Rogers has priorities. You know what we need some millions of dollars for? We need some tax breaks for the coal industry because there's a war on coal. This man cannot get out of bed in the morning without a coal industry lobbyist standing there handing him money. It's pathetic, really. I have real sympathy for people who are represented by Hal Rogers because, like them, well, I got no political representation. I got no governor. I got no member of Congress. I got no senator. I have no legislator to whom I can reach out because they're all friends of coal, and by definition, that means they are not friends of me or friends of the future. Or friends of health, or friends of decency, or friends of clean, breathable air, or clean, drinkable water. Lord God. But, you know, that's America, isn't it? Note from Kevin in Colorado Springs, subject line, Ebola and Congress, Don't worry, Bob. Once a right-wing heterosexual member of Congress gets the Ebola, the money will flow without hesitation. Like, yea, verily, unto a mighty river, I suppose. Yeah, but see, that's the thing. God loves right-wing heterosexual members of Congress, and they're not going to never go nowhere that they might catch the Ebola. And if they do, we will simply spirit them away to a hospital in Nebraska or Atlanta, and we'll give them all the best drugs in the world, and they'll be all better. Right? Sadly, right. Marty does not much care for my idea of sending conservatives and teabaggers and whatnot to the Jovian moon. No way, Marty says. They've spoiled this planet enough. Let us take to space and leave them the Earth to despoil and otherwise destroy the biosphere. But see, I get... Dang it, Marty. I get kind of misty-eyed and downright sentimental about this here little ball of mud. It's the only home we've ever known. I'd rather send them somewhere else. Oh, well, we can probably work that out somewhere along the way. Oh, did I leave out that part? Okay, Steve pointing out, you forgot white male hetero Congress critter. Well, if I did leave that out, I apologize, because, I don't know, maybe I was sort of assuming that that goes as red in these things. I mean, after all, they're not going to send some fair flower of American femininity over to the Africa where she might get the Ebola. No. And the brave, bold, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing right-wingers ain't going to go neither. That's what them squishy liberals is for. Yes, yes, of course. Jim with an email. Don't these idiots remember the 80s or Reed and the band played on? Do they not even regard the CDC? One representative stated GE loved firing gay people today on Facebook this afternoon. Oh, my God. Assholes, says Jim. They remember the 80s, Jim. Some of them may even have read the comic book version of And the Band Played On. And their only regret is that we didn't let HIV completely light up the nation because, just like their hero Jerry Falwell said, it was a gay plague. It was sent to rid the earth of the abomination. Tim from L.A. writing says, on Facebook we were commenting about Ebola, and I came up with this thought. I just realized something. The Ebola is the western part of the African the Ebola in the western part of the African continent, not country, you dumb shits, is killing Africans. You didn't mean y'all. Is killing Africans. On the eastern side of the continent, there are Christian conservatives with their pray the gay away mentality, killing Africans. Now imagine if the Ebola virus heads east. I'm not wanting innocent men, women, and children to suffer, but wouldn't it be ironic that the work of the Christians are doing for God is counted by the work God has done to Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, and Senegal? My, the ironies of God. Tim continues, too bad Ebola isn't selective and erases the morons who call themselves the children of Jebus. Again, let me reiterate, I hope that there is a cure. Finally, now that Ebola has infected Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, and Senegal, isn't it now considered a pandemic and not an epidemic? Just wondering. The CDC is apparently still calling it an epidemic. Bill in Montana noting the harsh elegance of the plain truth. And he refers us to Carl Sagan's remarks on the pale blue dot. We succeeded in taking that picture from deep space, and if you look at it, you see a dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. I just wish we could find another dot for the Hal Rogerses of the world. It's Titanic Tuesday. It's turtles all the way down. It's going to be like this for the rest of the night. 30 minutes into the program so far, we remain at $150 to go on fundraising for the evening. Any help is help that is much appreciated. Oh, where next with our next Moran? I mean, we got several. The Senate Republicans from the United States Senate have sent out a blast email soliciting funds on behalf of Shelley Moore Capito, the daughter of the single most corrupt politician ever to operate in the state of West Virginia, namely Arch Moore. You know, she looks like Arch in a bad wig. Arch in drag. Yeah, I know, the horror. Democrat Natalie Tennant is afraid to give West Virginians a straight answer. This is more I was complaining about the TV ads last night, but then I also mentioned that they found their way over to the YouTube. And whatever communications medium it is, these mercenary, sleazy, filthy, right-wing political consultants, all of these things are merely vehicles by which they are vectors by which they can spread their filth. In light of what it has done to our political process, perhaps we could call political advertising political Ebola. While running for U.S. Senate, she dodges question after question, refusing to say if she would have voted for Obamacare. Make no mistake, Natalie Tennant remains strongly supportive of President Obama. Comma, that, and the word that they'd love to use, but they just don't quite feel comfortable enough. I wish they would. Just come out. Today, Tennant has tried to distance herself from the Obama administration and their well-known anti-coal stance. She even avoids being seen publicly with President Obama. She isn't fooling anyone. We know she's a lover. In contrast, Representative Shelley Moore Capito has a proven record of standing with the coal jobs in West Virginia. You know what's interesting? This is hilarious. They start this ad out by saying, she won't say if she would have voted for Obamacare. But Shelley Moore Capito has a record, and she voted time after time after time to keep working people in West Virginia and the rest of the United States from having access to health care, you know, because she subscribes to the Republican policy, thank you, Alan Grayson, of die quickly. Oh, where's a great... I wonder, where's that great big Warner Brothers grand piano when you need Shelley Moore Capito to walk under it? No, but it goes on like this, ad infinitum. Oh, dear God, yes. Hey, look, another right-wing intellectual. I mean, if it's Titanic Tuesday, come on. The right-wing in America think that the smartest man in America is Dr. Ben Carson. I don't guess the program has thus far merited the duct tape and hockey puck warning. I mean, if you like the tactile sensation of tennis ball fuzz, you can stay with the tennis ball, but many of us have opted for the hockey puck. The smartest, well, maybe he's not the smartest man in America, but he's the smartest blah man in America. He's sure smarter than that one in our White House. Ben Carson did an interview with some chuckle nuts from over at one of those right-wing sites. Fortunately, our long-suffering pals over at Right Wing Watch caught the audio. Kind of giving you a little time here. Just get the duct tape, bite down on the hockey puck, once around the head with the duct tape, do at least, and what you want to do is just be strapped right in. I mean, wiggle the chair real good to make sure that you can't get out of it. All right. Ben Carson knows exactly how to understand his brother in melanin. He does. Oh, no. Come on. You can't do this to me. Oh, there it is. There's our problem.
Using that official.
There we go. Hang on. We're going to have to reload the page. Technology. Are we all strapped in now? Good. Good, good, good. We're all nice and ready. Try not to howl too loudly. You'll upset the neighbors and maybe set the neighbor dogs to barking. Be careful.
Now to see Attorney General Holder use the full assets of the Justice Department for what he claims to be an inquiry into Ferguson. Is he using that official government agency for political purposes?
Well, I would say people should read a book called The Naked Communist. It was written in 1958, and it sort of shows the whole time.
1958? The Naked Communist? 1958? You mean that one in our White House is some sort of seventh-level guild navigator who can fold space? That's before he was even born! My God, he's scary powerful.
Timeline of what would be necessary in terms of, you know, gaining control of school systems, of unions, and eventually being able to get a foothold in government, the executive branch included, which includes the DOJ, and what could be done under those circumstances. It was written in 1958. If you read it, you would think it was written last year.
Well, if you read it and you lived in a bell jar and you had the IQ of a recently cut piece of peat moss, okay. But I really, you wouldn't think it was written last year. And for Dr. Ben Carson to suggest that anybody who's listening to him in the right wing or thinks that he's the smartest Negro in America, which they do, think at all? No, sorry.
Dr. Carson, some people are going to hear your words and they're going to say, wait a minute, Dr. Carson is calling President Obama and Attorney General Holder communists.
It did occur to me. And not just communists, naked communists. Where are the white women at? Comrade?
Are you doing that?
My answer would be the same. Read the book. I just gave it to you.
Somewhere in these Chiricahua Hills, the Apaches buried Cochise, the greatest of their great chiefs. No white man will ever know where. Now Time Life is prepared to bring you the Old West. Read the book. Oh, Jesus. John Wesley Hardin was so mean he once shot a man for snoring. Read the book.
Read that book.
See?
Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen. And
oh, my goodness me. He gave us the author. I didn't think he would have the nerve to admit it. But yes, Cleon Skousen. You know, about 1 million international units of penicillin will clear up your Skousen.
And read, you know, Mein Kampf, and read the works of Vladimir Lenin. Read them yourself. I tell people, don't listen to what I'm saying. Read it yourself. I think.
Because I never have! So we get the upshot here. This is gonna be, well, okay, not for the people who march around with tea bags hanging from their headgear and tricorn hats and muskets and carry signs that say "Keep your government hands off my Medicare" and "Obama is the Antichrist" and all of that stuff. Maybe not so much. See. Steve's right there with me. Ha, 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 says Steve. Joke's on him. The right wing doesn't read. Woo! But this is, right, this is, still, I mean, this is like some sort of new kind of particle physics. He's going to be, Barack Hussein, damn it, Obama, is a Nazi communist. Yes, that's right. I just said a Nazi communist, and somewhere out there, bless his heart, Jim has given up the highball glass and just popped the cork and is going straight out of the bottle. A what? A Nazi communist. Yes, yes. Dr. Ben Carson, the smartest dark-skinned man in America, has said that the President of the United States, who is pretty demonstrably big fan of capitalism, is a Nazi communist. Tune in later for Fright Theater, where Count Floyd will share with us the brilliant film Bloodsucking Monkeys from Outer Space, who land in West Mifflin. It's a beautiful thing. And by the way, the interviewer, J.D. Hayworth, is a former, oh my God, right-wing teabagger congressman from Arizona. So even though he's off camera, I'm sure he's sitting there just nodding his little noggin. Mm-hmm. Read the book. Nazi communist from outer space. He's not actually from that African country called Kenya. It's another planet. You know, just like Dr. Frankenfurter.
And read, you know, Mein Kampf, and read the works of Vladimir Lenin. Read them yourself. I tell people, don't listen to what I'm saying. Read it yourself. I think it'll make a much bigger impression on you.
Bless your little hearts, right-wing watch. I don't know how you do it. I think the little interns who go in and cut this stuff must just wear those little hats like they take to the Packer games that have, you know, two bottles of brandy in there and a little slurpy plastic hose where you can just get a little honk and, okay, I'm going to cut some Ben Carson now. But Ben Carson wasn't finished. Now that we all know that one in our White House is a Nazi communist, and, you know, under the best of circumstances in which they are both roasting in hell, Hitler and Stalin are looking at each other going, "Was? Huh? Study some jellies, huh?" Okay, well, this is, all right, I mentioned the giant Warner Brothers grand piano a little bit ago. We now have an esoteric debate going on via email. Randy in PA says, "I prefer the Monty Python 16-ton weight." Well, that's because, maybe that's because you prefer British humor. Told ya! And there's our email from Jim. Say what? I do not think the Nazi communist outer space will work. We cannot have a communist Nazi gap. You have any idea what it's like to sit and listen to this stuff two or three times before airtime comes around? But no, he wasn't done. Having informed the world that Barack Hussein Obama is a Nazi communist, it's kind of like a water-based oil. Then again, all the science folks in the Horn Family Commune congregation, like, oh, Bob, there are. Those things do exist. Damn it. But no, he had some more. And bear in mind, as we on this here Titanic Tuesday, on the 9th day of September 2014, as we discuss the Titanic intellect of Dr. Ben Carson, would you let this guy, I mean, he was what, a pediatric brain surgeon or something? Would you let this guy anywhere near anyone you cared about? Hey, Doc, take your docking skills and maybe, no, don't. There's already enough people dying of Ebola. Well, they're not properly invoking the gods. No. Because he is, yes. And Steve is just right there with me. Steve says, cue the line. Worries about the plot to sap and impurify our precious bodily fluids. See, the trouble with the duct tape is you can get one hand duct taped to the chair, but that leaves another one free, and that's how they're managing to do the typing. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Morning, Robert. Communist Nazis? Wasn't that in The Simpsons about 15 years ago? Only then it was funny. But no, he wasn't done. Having educated us about communist Nazis as proven by Cleon Skousen back when that one folded space and entered Cleon Skousen's mind like... By the way, look up Cleon Skousen. Hell, I'll look up Cleon Skousen. This guy was a real Lulu. Cleon Skousen is also, the Beckerhead is a big fan of Cleon Skousen. He was one of those wild-eyed, there's a commie behind the rose bush, there's a commie under the bed, commies everywhere. It's one of those time machine things. You know, he actually got one of his first jobs as... at the Agricultural Adjustment Administration, which was created by the New Deal. He went from there to the FBI. He was an FBI messenger while he was attending law school. By the way, world, don't blame us for Cleon Skousen. Our dear neighbors to the north get to own him. He was born January 20th, 1913 in Alberta. He also was one of those people who believed that when he died he was going to get his own private planet and that Jesus and Satan were brothers who lived on the planet Kolob with their daddy Jehovah. Mm-hmm. This is that guy. He had a real fan club among the John Birch Society in the 1960s. You know, everybody's a commie, except them. He was part of the Council for National Policy that was founded by the guy who wrote the Left Behind books. You getting an idea here? And he even got in trouble with the Mormons, because when the Mormons were confronted in the 1970s with their doctrine that people with melanin in their skin were not fully formed humans capable of achieving the Mormon priesthood, and they began considering maybe, possibly, kinda, sorta, admitting that dark-skinned people were fully human, Cleon Skousen was incensed. No, really, not kidding. The guy who was recommending the Cleon Skousen book would be deemed not to be fully human by Cleon Skousen. Mm-hmm. And so he wrote, The Communist Attack on the Mormons, in which he said that communists had distorted the religious tenet of the church regarding the Negro and blowing it up to ridiculous proportion. They are communist dupes. Mm-hmm. What is it about cranky old Mormons wanting to talk about the Negro? And where is he? Do we know him? Have we met him? Does he get a check for being the Negro? Is there a song, a sash, a competition? Is there a first runner-up who serves in case the Negro is unable to fulfill his duties or hers? Oh, my God. But anyway, Cleon Skousen, Ben Carson, maybe, I don't know. But having explained all of that, Ben Carson also wanted us to know that he understands everything. Everything. I mean, everything. Is Carol in there? No. Okay, so she won't have to scream or anything. Hi, Carol, this is a special super double plus big warning for you, Carol, because it involves Ferguson. Hockey puck, duct tape. Here we go. It's not like I didn't warn you.
When you hear that President Obama and the Democrats want to base their campaign for the midterms on racial division, on the politics of Ferguson, Missouri, what's your reaction?
Now, hold on a damn minute. When you hear that, well, I don't know. I think we need some deeper background here. When you hear that, Dr. Carson, from whom do you hear it? Because I'm pretty sure that there's no Democratic National Committee policy statement saying we are going to base our strategy for the 2014 midterms on the politics of Ferguson. Wow. So start with false premise. Fold in lunatic.
My reaction is that I hope that the American people are getting smarter by the day and realize that there are a number of people who like to manipulate them and fan the flames of division.
Because, see, when people got upset because an unarmed 18-year-old young man with his hands in the air was gunned down by police, well, they only got upset, according to Dr. Ben Carson, because people were manipulating them and fanning the flames of division. And when people came out into the streets to protest the killing of Michael Brown, it was because they'd been manipulated and somebody had fanned the flames of division. And it was only because of all that flame fanning, that the St. Louis County Police Department had to bring out snipers and guys with machine guns and tanks and armored vehicles. Silly, silly protesters.
And they start thinking for themselves. What we need to understand is...
Because all those people protesting were not thinking for themselves. They were just transported by some sort of animal emotionalism into not thinking at all, and by not thinking we mean not simply accepting that in America in 2014, sometimes unarmed young black men just get gunned down by the police. If only they'd think for themselves.
Yes, Ferguson was a tragedy, and there are many tragedies like that that occur every day.
Huh? Yes, Ferguson was a tragedy, and there are tragedies that occur like that every day? Well, minimize horror much, Dr. Ben Carson? Well, of course it was a tragedy when I left that scalpel inside the brain of the little newborn baby. But tragedies like that happen every day. Is that what he said when he malpracticed on somebody's kid? Hey, these things happen every day. You know, think for yourself.
But it has less to do with racism and a lot more to do with some deep cultural issues.
Oh, stop it. What kind of word salad is that? It has less to do with racism and more to do with deep cultural issues. Okay, deep cultural issues. Isn't that some... did somebody go and teach Dr. Ben Carson the white people dog whistle code? Deep cultural issues. You know, then quit walking around with their saggy pants and stuff, and maybe the police wouldn't shoot them. Deep cultural issues. I mean... oh, God.
That are producing individuals who are likely to end up in trouble with the law.
That's right. Not even 2 weeks in the ground, and Ben Carson has just wandered over and taken a squat right on the dirt over... he was just likely to wind up in trouble with the law. And when you wind up in trouble with the law, well, it's okay if the law shoots you, even if you're unarmed and unthreatening and have your hands up and are essentially begging for your life. Let's go back just a little bit. I'll try not to interrupt.
Has less to do with racism and a lot more to do with some deep cultural issues that are producing individuals who are likely to end up in trouble with the law, who are likely to end up in conflict with each other, which will lead to violence and death.
Chicago! Black-on-black violence! Come on! I mean, quit looking at the police! Oh, there's only a few more seconds of this. Praise Jesus.
And we need to be addressing those kinds of issues, not, obeying the dictates of those who fan the flames of division for their own political reasons.
Look away, Dixieland. But see, the essential hypocrisy of Dr. Ben Carson is right here. Right here. Hang on.
To violence and death. And we need to be addressing those kinds of issues, not, obeying the dictates of those who fan the flames of division for their own political reasons.
okay, we can have that conversation. We're rational. Would those issues be, say, unemployment? Well, Dr. Ben Carson despises unemployment compensation. Would those issues include poverty? Well, Dr. Ben Carson doesn't want to do anything to lift anybody out of poverty. How about unequal treatment under the law? Well, no. If somebody brings that up, they're just doing that for their own political reasons. No, when Dr. Ben Carson talks about these things, Dr. Ben Carson means it was Michael Brown's fault for being Michael Brown. Got it? Because these guys are, after all, right-wing monsters. And I know that I don't favor talking about the 2016 presidential election, but I think I would be remiss if I did not point out that it is generally taken as read that Dr. Ben Carson has what are referred to as presidential ambitions. Does that give you the screaming? Right, yes. A little bit of email rolling in. Ron and Raleigh with a bit of commentary. Hey, Bob, back in the day when he was a young feller, Ben Carson's teachers thought he was a little slow. They were right. Ron continues, back when I was a young colored fella, there were some colored people that were called color struck. I've never heard that phrase before. I think I'm getting educated. That phrase meant that anything a white person said or did was the gospel. Ben Carson and Clarence Slappy Thomas are both color struck. Thank you. I've never heard that phrase. Thank you, Ron. It seems to be applicable. Jim pointing out, straight from the moronosphere, ideological emulsion. Who are these people and what are their sources? People believe this shit. Back to the 50s. Without Michael J. Fox. Philip with an email. A new and improved Negro ready for the White House. No additional words are necessary except to note that living 15 miles south of Johns Hopkins, I had been under the mistaken impression that Dr. Carson was a neurologist, only to learn these past few years that he was really a proctologist who administered to the right wing with such zealousness that he inadvertently embedded his head in their recta. Philip includes a link, a photo from Run, Ben, Run. Ben Carson, President 2016, National Draft Ben Carson for President Committee. Oh, dear God, I wish that was a parody. Oh, God, you mean there? Oh, Marty, please, no. You may be the author of your own curse. Marty with an email. So you're not playing his defense of Ray Rice? Thank goodness for some things. There is one of those? Well, I mean, it's an equal. I mean, all are welcome at Titanic Tuesday. And as we do wrap up the first hour of the Philibobster on this here Titanic Tuesday for the 9th day of September 2014, I am proud to say that that Philip has gotten us started, and we are now only $135 away from meeting our fundraising goal. Thank you very kindly, Philip. Philip provided us with an email earlier. He said, "Your reading listeners' emails and taking time to answer in writing or on air is what makes the horn so special. Friday on the Front Porch is always a delight because intelligent and informed listeners are engaged in conversation about the issues of the day. The truth is, I can think of no other radio show in which the host engages in conversation and doesn't seek to persuade the audience that he or she is keenly intelligent, accomplished, and above all, always right. Wasn't that an ad slogan for Rush Limbaugh at one point? Always right! Rush Limbaugh at noon on W... I can think, continues Philip, I can think of at least one allegedly progressive radio show on which the host hawks his books and opines at length following every caller after allocating only a few seconds for the caller. As a longtime progressive, I am leery of other progressives who are unwilling to listen to others, want to push dogmatic and intransigent views, or display smugness and elitism. That kind of pompous rectitude has a home in right-wing radio and, as you note, most religions. As a working-class kid who was lucky enough to get scholarships that enabled him to attend a private college, I took my German courses via consortium at a fine university because my college only offered upper-level courses for the other language, French, and that was part of my major. I still remember 20-year-old Trotskyites, Marxists, and other youthful political geniuses who were just as close-minded and doctrinaire as any evangelical or fundamentalist praising Hermann Hesse for leaving his family and pursuing his artistic craft and vision. They marveled at Hesse's willingness to cast aside bourgeois aspirations and escape the humdrum life of the middle class by heading to Sri Lanka and Indonesia to follow his dream, and, of course, ignored the fact that Hesse was able to write, thanks in part to a wealthy benefactor. Perhaps the benefactor was too close to home, perhaps because in large part they were waiting for the opportunity to inspire and lead the proletariat while attending college at their bourgeois parents' expense. Given Hesse's despicable politics and abandonment of his family, I offered my dissenting opinion that many men and women in my social class had worthwhile dreams and aspirations that they willingly sacrificed to support their families and worked jobs they disliked in order to do so. I continued by stating that, in my opinion, there was nothing heroic about Hesse leaving his wife and children to fend for themselves. After class, several students came up to me and expressed their agreement with my opinion and concomitantly their surprise that I was working class. I suppose I should have been generous in accepting their flattery, but instead I thanked them and left the classroom as quickly as I could. Similarly, at my primary college, a commuting student with a strong urban Massachusetts accent, reflecting his working-class background, would offer insightful and cogent opinions about what we were studying. Most of the students at my college were middle-class, and more than a few would snicker and whisper that the commuting student sounded ignorant. I speak like I write and speak in public. That is, I use the accent and vocabulary that was used for education in my family. As a result, many people assume that I come from an upper-class background when, in fact, my father was a high school dropout and my mother's income was essential to supporting a family of five in an era when all the other mothers were homemakers. After one class in which several students were especially obnoxious, I approached my professor after class and told him I would use my townie accent and vocabulary that I use only with family and friends from my home state when I next spoke in class. I did, and there was no snickering that day or afterwards when the commuting student spoke. I know that, Philip continues, as a native Southerner, you know firsthand the assumptions that are made about Southerners because of their accents. In my home state, Massachusetts, I knew more than a few people who considered Southerners ignorant because of their accents. Conversely, when I moved to Texas, people would remark that I sounded like a Kennedy. Needless to say, what is so great about the horn is the contribution of articulate progressive Southerners. You've truly created conversation radio, and to be honest, I find myself envious of the callers and email writers who are expatriates in Sweden, Australia, China, and other countries. They offer insights and views from afar about this country that I lack because I can only afford to live in the United States. Then again, I suppose I could consider a decade in Texas as an expatriate experience. Biting my tongue on it because I remember we have many progressive friends in Texas. We have had a tough year financially and health-wise, Philip says. However, when I'm able, I feel compelled to send some money to the horn and forego other pleasures such as a night of pizza. I wish I could contribute more because the days of silence, but for Agnes's magnificent violin solos, created a void akin to planning for and looking forward to company coming over and having to contend with an unexpected cancellation at the last minute. Thanks again to you and all the Horn family and callers. Even after listening for several years, the Horn still remains a fresh and unique experience. Lest your head gets too big and begin to threaten the space reserved for the Horn computer and radio equipment, I enjoy Dr. Bill as much as I enjoy your program and feel like I'm attending a college seminar for free when I listen to Dr. Bill. High praise indeed. Thank you, Philip. Thank you kindly. Ron and Raleigh asking, could Philip be talking about you-know-who? I think he is, Ron. I think he is. I tell you what, I was going to take a break, but let's don't. I've been keeping someone on hold for a while. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hey, Jim.
How are you?
Hanging on.
Well, you seem to be doing pretty well in your process of hanging on, that's for sure.
Well, see, the thing is, everybody else gets to use the hockey puck and the duct tape, and I just have to muddle through.
Well, I don't even bother with hockey tape. I love hockey tapes and buck tapes or whatever you want to call them. I just get a big bottle with a nipple on it.
Well, I figured that, I mean, I intended no slur when I said that earlier, Jim.
I didn't quite catch that.
Well, no, when Dr. Ben Carson got to where he was talking about the communist Nazis, I said Jim's just going to set the highball glass aside and go straight to the bottle, you know, go.
No, not quite.
Decorum must be observed, right?
Well, yeah, I guess so. You know, a lot of the stuff that you read from some of these people, it's just so idiotic and just so ridiculous. I am so sorry that Joan Rivers is not with us to incorporate some of that stuff in her material, because I'm sure she could really, really do it proud.
Well, where Dr. Ben Carson is concerned, the truly run and hide under the bed, you know, with the fifth of scotch, terrifying moment is to realize that there is some portion of the body politic in this country that says he'd be a wonderful president. There's a black man I could vote for.
I know. You know, I would just like for them to write out a job description with knowledge and skills and abilities of what it takes to be a black man or a person of another color. I would love to see the job description written and printed out. I really would. I'm sure it would amaze you.
I think most white folks would just be stunned. Most of us have no conception.
No, I don't think we do. I don't think we do. And it's just incredible that people say all this stuff that you've been quoting over. It absolutely amazes me. I mean, you know, just when you think that idiocy has reached the heights of its fulfillment, new wonders appear. And there it is. And I stand back and look in amazement. But I would like to say one thing aside from what we're saying, pursuant to Joan Rivers. And I'd like to pay her some type of accolade. No matter how depressed or sad I could ever be, when I watched her, she always had the ability to make me laugh. And she did a lot more than that. She broke a lot of glass ceilings, and she fought real hard for what she had. And she knew how to stand her ground. And by standing her ground, she didn't hurt anybody with a weapon. She was right out there in front and was a vanguard for many things. And I will miss her terribly.
Many will. I think more would. But right there toward the end of her existence, and I know this really stuck in the craw of a lot of people, Jim, was when she said that the children being blown up in Gaza deserved to be dead.
Well, Joan had a lot of, she could be pretty acerbic. She said some things about Anne Frank that I didn't agree with. But I'm just going along with the whole the whole thing. Her entire philosophy was, no matter how bad something was, well, she tried to make some type of joke of it, and it may have offended a lot of people, and I didn't agree with all she said. But as a comedian, and in her own way as an activist, and in her own way as a person who overcame an awful lot, she will be sadly missed by this speaker. I have both of her books. I haven't read them yet. But nonetheless, she...
Well, I mean, there's no getting around the truth of what you said. She really did break a lot of glass ceilings.
Yes, she did. I mean, really. I mean, she had a lot of rough breaks along the way. And I guess that made her... And she even expressed this in one of her later interviews, probably 2 weeks ago, how this could case harden you and just make you almost... inured to bad things as they happen, because that's the way that was her worldview, and she tried to make a lot of things so bad that at least they could be a little more palatable in certain ways to some people. Didn't always agree with her, but I loved her, and I'm gonna miss her.
Oh, she was very, very funny from time to time, without a doubt.
And highly intelligent. Oh, my God, she was. Absolutely. Very intelligent woman. And self-made, came up from absolutely, basically nothing. And she did do very well in college, was not exactly supported by her parents and her choice to be an actress or a comedian or whatever. But nonetheless, she had her own worldview, and we each have our own worldview. So I can't really criticize her too much. Like I say, she made me laugh, and I will really miss her terribly. But going back to some of the other stuff that you had tonight, I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. But you know, nothing really surprises me anymore. I used to be shocked. I used to be, is that so? And now, nothing.
Not so much.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, hell, not at all. Not a damn thing surprises me that any of these idiots say. And well, this stance, for example, on Ebola, I mean, these people don't realize that that stuff.
Let me interrupt for just a minute before you go where you're going, Jim. Where Hal Rogers is concerned, it's not that he doesn't understand. He doesn't care. He just flat does not care. Hal Rogers has been in the House of Representatives since God was a baby. And if whatever is being done there does not directly inure to the benefit of Hal Rogers, Hal Rogers does not care.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Obviously, the only interest he has are his own. He can give a rat's derriere about anything else but exactly what is going to promote his own agenda. And how a man like that could stay in Congress is very, well, it's not shocking to me, but it's terrible. The people who would put him back there. How long has he been in service there?
Oh, Jesus, God. I mean, forever. Forever. And, you know, oddly enough, when it's somebody like Hal Rogers being there forever, well, you don't hear the teabaggers hooting about term limits.
Oh, no. No, they want him to stay.
Oh, okay. An answer to your question, he has been there for 33 years.
Well, I think he's going to refute that thing that was said in Chinatown by John Huston.
Wait, I think
old buildings.
I think I've even got the clip here. Let's get it right from the mouth of
old buildings, whores, and politicians. If they hang around, will even become respectable. But you say it.
Yeah, right here it is.
Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
There you go. There you go. You've done it for me, and I'm going to let you go and talk to somebody else. Okay?
All right, Jim. You have a good evening, and, cheers, you know?
Absolutely, and same to you.
Thank you.
Cheers to everybody. Cheers and beers, or whatever your potable is, or whatever gets you off.
Name your poison. Whatever gets you through the night. Have a good evening, Jim.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from not too far away. I do. I love that clip. I want to hear it again, by God.
Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
Yes, indeedly doodly they do. So let's do take a little bit of a break. I had Jim sitting there on hold, and I didn't want to. I didn't know it was Jim at the time, but anyway. We'll take a wee bit of a break, and because among other things, the Green News Report. We have the Green News Report this evening, and you know me, I love the Green News Report. We are still trying to work our way toward completing our fundraising goal for the evening. We are at $135 to go, so that's kind of an odd number, and it rather defies mathematical calculating. Well, I mean, it doesn't defy it. It can be done. I just can't do it on the fly because there are fractions and the portions of, you know. If we can, let's just get it out of the way, and thank you very kindly to Philip. For getting us started. Oh, what would be a good? You know what? Let's not be so topical for this evening's bumper. Let us instead be calendrical. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. After the Green News Report, we'll get right going on more of what we call here, and doesn't happen many other places, conversation radio.
Bye. It's Tuesday, September 9, 2014.
This is a disaster that doesn't respect borders.
Catastrophic flooding in Pakistan and India.
They got on top of the car because the water is so high here.
Historic flooding in Phoenix, Arizona.
The data is unforgiving, no matter what the deniers try to assert.
Hillary Clinton says global warming is both a crisis and an opportunity. Plus,
we took a stand here today, and case by case, incident by incident, we will continue to take a stand.
A win for the lobster boat blockade and climate action.
All of those wins and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Debbie Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Sea levels are rising, ice caps are melting, storms, droughts, and wildfires are wreaking havoc.
What's that all about?
It's about climate change, you unmitigated Fox News jackass. Get the hell out of your fossil-fueled bubble once in a while and find out what the hell is going on in the world. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, never mind Fox News and their chronic denialism. We've got historic deluges on all sides of the world today, in Pakistan, in India, back home here in Phoenix, Arizona.
And Nevada.
To quote Bill Hemmer of Fox News.
What's that all about?
Well, that would be about global warming turbocharging extreme weather. In the Kashmir region, shared by Pakistan and India, biblical rains have again triggered massive flash floods that have killed nearly 500 people, reports the BBC.
This is just one of several bridges that have been washed away. All the key highways in the state, especially those that are connecting the northern and southern parts, have been snapped, making it much harder for rescue teams try and reach those in need.
This is the fifth straight year of devastating monsoons and floods in Pakistan. I don't know if you remember the biblical floods in Pakistan in 2010 that covered a fifth of the country. Well, every single year since then has landed in the top five most expensive flood disasters in Pakistan history. In India, the incidents of heavy deluges have more than doubled since the 1950s. Meanwhile, back here in the U.S., a state of emergency declared in Phoenix.
Canals were flooded and neighborhoods were evacuated.
They're starting to help people who are stranded here. Many of them who've lived here for years, they have never seen the I-10 this bad in their lives.
On Monday, a season's worth of rain fell in just a few hours, smashing the record for the wettest day in Phoenix history, overwhelming the city's flood infrastructure. Two people were killed as flash floods inundated the city. Dozens had to be rescued from flooded freeways. And it's the second time in 3 weeks that this kind of deluge has occurred.
I might suggest it's the third time. We were in Phoenix earlier this summer, had an unbelievable deluge, and I talked to people who had been there for decades, and they, too, said they had never seen anything like this. So maybe a good time to buy beachfront property in the desert of Phoenix?
Global warming was the key to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's keynote address at the annual National Clean Energy Summit in Las Vegas.
This is the most consequential, urgent, sweeping collection of challenges we face as a nation and a world. Sea levels are rising, ice caps are melting, storms, droughts, and wildfires are wreaking havoc. 13 of the top 14 warmest years have all come since 2000. So the threat is real, but so is the opportunity.
What's that all about?
Well, for Secretary Clinton, it's about clean energy. She said the answer is for the U.S. to become a superpower again.
Because if we come together to make the hard choices, the smart investments in infrastructure, technology, and environmental protection, America can be the clean energy superpower for the 21st century.
Clinton covered a lot of important ground on how the U.S. can win the global clean energy race, but she didn't mention the controversial Keystone XL pipeline, or whether she, if she became president, would approve it. Meanwhile, Republican Senator from Kentucky Rand Paul, a potential Republican presidential candidate, told Fox News that Secretary Clinton doesn't have the wisdom to be president.
I don't think we really want a commander-in-chief who's battling climate change instead of terrorism.
Really, Rand Paul? That sounds like a great idea to me. wish we had one now, as a matter of fact.
Finally, in Massachusetts, two men facing prison for civil disobedience for using their lobster boat to block a massive coal shipment one day back in May of 2013. Well, the men of the lobster boat blockade planned to use what's called the necessity defense, arguing they had no choice but to break the law to prevent a greater harm from being done. But on Monday, Bristol District Attorney Sam Sutter beat them to it and dropped the charges.
Climate change is one of the gravest crises our planet has ever faced. In my humble opinion, the political leadership on this issue has been gravely lacking. I am heartened that we were able to reach an agreement that symbolizes our commitment at the Bristol County District Attorney's Office to take a leadership role on this issue.
Amen.
The criminal charges were dismissed and reduced to a civil infraction and a fine.
Way to go, lobster boat guys. For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Minutes before the hour, we are, turn that down, Bob, we are at the halfway mark for this evening's Titanic Tuesday program, and let us stand not upon the order, but are going, but go at once and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You're talking to me?
As ever.
Okay, I'm so unused to the one phone idea, you know?
I'm not crazy about it, but I'm happy for the one we've got. And there went Bill. maybe he'll try back in a minute. I hate it when that happens. Oh, well, maybe we'll hear back from Bill. Hopefully we will. I don't know where the phone call went. Sheesh. Let's see here. Oh, by the way, much bigger group in the chat room this evening. Want to hang out with some horn stalwarts? Go to the headonradionetwork.com chat room, and you'll meet Anatole and Benny and Dr. Who and Jay Cruzen and John and Kathy and M. Brandt and Art Kellison and Stockton Larry and Texas T and Tim from L.A. and Todd and our longtime veteran horn chat room moderators, Sparky and Lottie, are also there. So run on by if you've never been there before. I think you will enjoy it immensely. Marty mentioned something, and this will teach you, Marty. Oh, wait. Maybe this is Bill again. Hey, Bill.
Hey, sorry about that.
That's all right.
My phone went dead. Well, it's a long story, but this guy who's been helping me so much switched me over to a land-based cell phone company. And I wouldn't hit a dog in the ass with cell phones between you and me. But I have a buddy who repairs them in Chicago, so he has to go into those rooms at the bottom and fix the electronics. Anyhow, how are you?
I'm pretty good, I think. It's a little warm in here. I just checked. It's 85 degrees in the Horn Studio sauna here in the second week of September.
Well, I got the air pumping. I got scared to death yesterday. I got an eviction notice.
What?
Well, here this guy who's been handling so much of my goodies and helping so much, he mailed the check, and it got lost in the mail. He came in today and took care of it. But he won't give me a check, Bob. He's afraid just all those health aides will steal them.
Well, you know
I'm so sick of this guy.
I wouldn't get sick of the guy. I mean, you did get ripped off by your aides at one point, right?
Once, a long time ago. But if the checks are, you should have a checkbook in your possession, you know? Come on, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, because I'm afraid the phone's going to die again. Yeah, this is Ben, what's his name, Carden?
Ben Carson. Not to be confused with Ben Cardin, who is a senator from Maryland. No, this is a right wing teabagging
This alleged doctor?
Alleged, yes.
Yeah. Man, oh, man. Because all I can think of is they used to do a thing. Remember Ben Casey, the old TV show?
Oh, yes.
Probably your time. Well, somebody used to do a takeoff on it called Ben Crazy.
Uh-huh.
This guy is off the wall, man.
Well, and I got more of him because he had to jump right out there and defend Ray Rice for doing a one punch knockout of the woman who had become his wife.
Well, you know, that was the other thing I was going to cover with you. Who do you think suspended the league? Suspended him for 2 days, or was it a team?
No, him. The league did. 2 days.
Is the GM, you know the GM at Baltimore, don't you?
No.
Well, his name is Ozzie Newsome.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah.
As of yesterday, the Ravens tore up his contract.
Good for them. Because I like Newsome. Newsome set a record for consecutive games catching passes for a tight end. So he was I think he may be in the Hall, in fact. He may be the only guy in the Hall of Fame in the Cleveland Browns organization that was not either drafted by or played for Paul Brown. And that's a long time ago, buddy.
Well, Ozzie Newsome was a whale of a football player.
I was about 19, you know. So that's a while ago. And there's a lot of us old farts that will never get over the fact that the owner fired Paul. And the deal was that Paul had been doing all of the draft picks and all, you know, to play 6 or 7 times consecutive for the National Football League title. I mean, before it was super, you know, when it was just a game. You know how you draft to the NFL? The higher you finish, the lower you draft. And that's what it used to be. But Paul somehow kept the team going, and he brought Jim Brown in here. And I happened to meet Jim, and I was taken to, I used to work at an old league park, the old baseball place. And I had a guy from the Catholic Big Brothers taking me down there, and I got to meet a lot of these guys. And the hell, I was, what was I, 15 or 16? What a trip that was, Bob.
Oh, I can well imagine.
And that team... What can you say about a team that wins their division 6 years in a row? And they had won it how many? 4 more years in the All-America Football Conference. There's a great book. It's titled America's Game, and it's a study of the National Football League. And there's a big section in the early, in 1949, when they were having these meetings that brought the Browns, the 49ers, and a Dallas team into the National Football League. The Dallas team collapsed and was moved to Baltimore as the Baltimore Colts, which is how everybody ever wondered, why did Baltimore end up in the Western Conference of the National Football League? I mean, I have a bad sense of direction sometimes, but I do know where Baltimore is located, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
I just wish I could go down and get some of that good seafood down there, but that's another story. Yeah, so here I get an eviction notice. There's something going on in my mind. You know, I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here? They straightened it out today, but it's just the idea that, Bob, I know I'm 72, but if you start, don't treat me like I've taken a trip to Egypt to see the river, you know?
You're right.
If you get the gist of that bad part.
Denial.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it. I need the help, you know? Yeah, but this doctor, Bob, this whole thing is, you talk about going back in time. I worked with a company where the boss brings in copies of a book here, None Dare Call It Treason, published by the John Birch Society. And most of us referred to the book as None Dare Call It Reason, because it was such trash.
And
yeah, that stuff, I mean, that outfit was, and me and my buddies would go to hear these guys speak, and then we'd heckle them all during the speech. It was fun to sit there and heckle somebody. You couldn't believe this crap they were talking about. And you know who John Birch was?
Vaguely, yes.
Yeah, he was an operative in China after the war, or during the late stages of the, or during the Chinese Civil War. He was an operative for the CIA. Or it wasn't called the CIA during the war. What was it called during the war?
OSS.
OSS?
Yes.
Was that it? Office of Strategic Services?
Something, yeah.
Yeah. And those guys, you know, the CIA, Truman, I wanted to find that letter Truman wrote to the newspapers about the position of the CIA. And I think it was long after his term was over. And he had some very unkind things to say, because the CIA was supposed to be only outside the United States. That's what it was designed. Because every nation has their services to see what the other guys are doing, you know, intelligence services. And they were not designed. When they were brought up, when they were started, they were not to operate inside the continental United States. But ICAD, what was his name, the Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles?
Yeah.
His brother Alan was on the CIA. And
they caused no end of mischief.
Pardon me?
They caused no end of mischief.
Well, that whole mess. That started, it wasn't Joe McCarthy, not to be confused with Gene McCarthy, you know, honestly. I mean, that man was out of his mind. He was a lush. I'm not making stuff out of alcoholics. I've had my share of booze in my life. But this guy was being listened to. What was he, senator from what, Wisconsin?
Yes.
Yeah, which is not the most potent state in the union, is it? I mean, it's not even. I mean, it's a good state. It's a great state, in fact, if you go up there to fish or whatever. And the people are fine, but it's just the idea that, of course, MacArthur's family came out of Wisconsin, too, Douglas. And he was a pill to work with. I mean, it was just, all this stuff is, and this guy today, this baby doctor, what gives him the real authority on any of the stuff he's talking about?
He has none, Bill. He's working a hustle. He's working a circuit. I mean, this is, you know, this is like comedians working, you know, working the Catskills. Okay, he's working the teabag circuit. There's a lot of money to be made out of those morons.
God Almighty! Boy, I hear him calling to some of the college talk shows that are on Sunday night, and Benghazi. So I finally called up the guy and said, I don't think this guy knows Benghazi from Ben Gay or Ben Gazzara. What can you do with people like that? Because what happened there, that can happen any time in any diplomatic situation.
Sure.
Somebody, I don't know if you're familiar with it. I wish maybe you'd Google it. Some Puerto Rican nationalists, maybe 51. Or 50, but they came in and they killed a White House policeman, and they shot it out with some other, you know, Washington armed people, you know, to protect the president. That was because they wanted freedom for Puerto Rico, and I don't see anything wrong with wanting freedom for Puerto Rico. Plus, it's your country. If you want to be independent, fine. But when you start throwing gunfire into the mixture, now you got a problem.
Well, exactly.
Even the guy that, what was his name, George Wallace, he could be a pain in the...
Well, he certainly was, yes.
You know, it seemed to be open season on American politicians with the Kennedy brothers and Wallace and Reagan. I was sitting in a barber chair waiting for a haircut when I was watching TV, and here comes Reagan out of a place, and here comes a guy with guns and shoots Reagan and his press secretary. God, I said, what's going on in this country? Although it did happen pretty heavy back in the Wasn't weren't both Garfield and McKinley killed by assassins?
Yes.
So, and you throw Lincoln in there, now we got three of them, you know? So, and Kennedy was four.
Mm-hmm. And others had shots taken at them. Teddy Roosevelt was shot during a speech and went on to talk another 2 hours and said, well, you know, it's just an occupational hazard.
Yeah, well, Teddy was a funny guy. Some of his ideas were fine, and some of them were, you know. He was the one that, didn't the book The Jungle come out when he was president?
Thereabouts, yeah.
And he's the one who said he'd never eat pork sausage again after reading the book. Oh, man. Because there's so many instances in our country of capital carriers, capitalists, would do anything to increase the profits in their product. And the hell with you or me. What is it? Does Pepsi use sugar, or do they use that?
Well, they do both. Most of their products are high fructose corn syrup, but in their Mountain Dew and in Pepsi, they make available something called Throwback, which reminds me of a fish you wouldn't eat, but never mind. Pepsi Throwback and Mountain Dew Throwback are made with cane sugar.
Yeah, because I used to like Coca-Cola, but you know what I've had that's really interesting?
What's that?
Mexican-made Coca-Cola.
And, yeah, I fell in love with that about 3 years ago, I think. You have to look for it, but you can find it, and it's all the difference in the world.
Yeah, I've had that stuff, and the first time I swigged out of it, I said, well, my God, I'm 10 years old again. This stuff, you can't tell you, it's not something that burns you. It burns the back of your throat. That's a... Because, I don't know, soft drinks, I've always been one not to drink them. I drink a lot of iced tea, but, you know. But there's so many things happening. And this doctor, though, what do you think? You think he's got a future in politics or just a...
I'm guessing his future in politics is about the same as Sarah Palin's future in politics. You have to say that you're interested in running in order to... You know, as the line goes from The Godfather, wet your beak. And so if you want to make money on this hustle, then you've got to say, well, I want to be president.
Oh, man. And you think it's because Obama's president that all this stuff is going on?
Sure.
If it was a Caucasian, you think they'd be just as nasty?
Wait. Okay, no. You got to back up a little bit. If it was John McCain or Willard Romney and the whole world was burning to the ground, the teabaggers would be as silent as the grave.
Yeah.
With, for instance, the looming possibility, and we'll probably stay far afield of this topic-wise, but with the looming possibility that Hillary Clinton will run for president, please understand that the hate machine is going to remain in what?
Right here.
Sweat condition alpha high dudgeon.
Yeah. Because they don't want to lose it. Can you imagine what it must have been like to be a Republican between 32 and 44?
And yeah, but can you imagine behind closed doors with John McCain in November 2008 when he's sitting there leaning on his one good hand and saying, "I got beat by a black man."
Yeah, well,
and then Romney got to join that chorus, and then whatever lunatic they nominate in 16 has the potential to be saying, "I got beat by a girl."
Well, McCain's flying around.
Because all of these ancient prejudices are completely available any time, day or night, for the godforsaken, miserable right wing.
Yeah. They've got to have something to hate. I don't know. I have to get a book that I had. Was it A Team of Equals about the Lincoln cabinet?
Yes. Team of Rivals. Team of Rivals.
Pardon me?
Team of Rivals.
She was Rivals. Okay, that was it. That was, what was her name that wrote that? She's a great...
Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good piece of work. I, so many years ago, I read, I think I... I'll tell you how long ago it was. I think I took it on vacation something to read when you couldn't, when the rain was raining so hard you couldn't fish, you know. So sit down and read something. Enjoy yourself. Get away. Well, the one time I was on vacationing in Chautauqua, and that's when O.J. got himself arrested. And being as close to Buffalo as that was, jeez, it's all you heard about from people in their neighborhood, you know. It's like, oh, brother.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, just it wasn't, it's why when you see if somebody's culturally famous and they get involved in something, it's six times as valuable as when it's Joe for Beach, you know, or somebody they never heard of. It's always tied to that because then the publicity, the news things get rolling and so-called news. Like I wish I could find a news radio station, I got all these talk shows, which are fine. Yours is one where I pick up some news a lot, you know. But this whole thing with, I'm waiting, my computer is sitting around and, one of the horn guys is gonna work on it. No, not the one you're thinking of, another one. And he had a tree fall on his house, the poor guy.
Oh no.
Jeez, yeah, it's, this, the amount of, it's like every place else, Bob. I've never seen more high wind storms in my long life until this year. I mean, there are bad storms in the past. There was one in 1903 that was so heavy that it ate the Ohio Canal, which was still running. The one, it ran from, you know, from the Ohio River to Lake Erie.
Yeah.
And there was one at the other end of the state, too, that ran to, I think, emptied into the lake at Toledo. Because canals were, before the railroads, they were the best way to move stuff. The Canadians used water like crazy to transport stuff. And you haven't lived till you've watched, stood at the Welland Canal where you can see the Welland and seen the ship coming through the locks. There's this huge thing looking at you miles way up in the air, you know. My God, look at that. Anyway, I won't keep any, but it's this rice thing is, that's why I was wondering about, because Ozzie Newsome was a guy who was loved in Cleveland as a person. He was a great guy. And him as a GM, I don't know, but I'll tell you what, I sometimes think to the owners of these teams, when push comes to shove, coaches, GMs, whatever, take second banana to those guys, you know, because they own the team, they're the ones calling the shots. And I hate to tell you, but what pro football was like before television came along, and they say that the big game between Baltimore and the New York Giants, the one the Browns would have gone through, the Browns went into New York for the last game of the season, and all I needed was a tie to go to the, you know, to go to the championship game. And New York beat him. Pat Summerall kicked something like a 53-yard field goal in the snow squall the first game. I was watching it with my guy from the Big Brothers. He's an attorney. When Summerall made that field goal, I saw a grown man stand up and kick over a reclining chair, you know. Football can do that to you. But as I say, I'm not, you know, I'm not the fan I used to be. When I was going through some old, really old magazines, there were all these pro football magazines, you know. But the one thing I learned from guys that I worked with in the factories, don't bet the games. The losers pay the winners and the bookies make 10%. How they looked at it, you know?
Yep.
Because I don't know, each one of those point spreads are like, oof, you know? Anyway, I'll let you go because there's people that can talk about maybe more intelligent things than I can, but...
You did just fine.
Okay, I wanted to know about this doctor, where the hell did he come from? Is it the only reason they like him because he's a black conservative? Is that the idea?
Yes. I mean, I hate to haul out certain unkind references, so I won't, but yes, that he's got a shtick that he is able to work because he is a very, very rare person.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with,
he is virulently right-wing. He comes across as, in Baggerland is considered to be intelligent. And he's black.
Well, I'll leave you with a quote from Sonny Bill Williamson II, not to be confused with the first. Lots of people talking about stuff that they don't know. And that's basically what you hear on the news constantly. They say when I hear a woman talking about a bank robbery at a Palmatox, I say, what the hell's grade school did you go to, lady? What history course did you ever take?
Appomattox?
Yeah. It was always Appomattox by any Civil War expert I ever heard talk.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Well, Bill, yourself a good evening, and we will hopefully talk soon.
Have a good night, and the way we say it anymore is don't drink the water, you know?
Ain't that the truth. Take care, Bill.
Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, legendary bluesman calling from Cleveland. About 4 minutes before the hour, and we are still camped out at $135 to go for fundraising for this evening. Golly gee, it would be awfully nice not to be in a $285 hole come tomorrow. Anybody wanting to help is welcome to do so over at headonradionetwork.com via the PayPal button or via the traditional United States Postal Service address, which is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And, yes, the number to call into the program is 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, and that will get you right into the program, and you'll be part of Conversation Radio. First-time callers, always welcome, and we've, except for occasional technical screw-ups, many of them on my part, we've never lost a caller. No fainting, and even when Bill had his medical emergency, we didn't lose him either. So that is offered in all seriousness. Have you been lurking for months listening to the horn, wondering when that moment might be that you would call in? This would be a lovely time for that. By the way, a note coming from Robert up in Morgantown. Good evening, Robert. Ray Rice is through. When you get kicked out of Madden 15 by EA Sports, I figure it's over. And just as proving to Marty that he doesn't necessarily want to enlighten me on things that he doesn't want to hear, yeah, apparently that weirdo right-wing website, something like Newsmuck, has him on an almost constant loop, because the clip we had of him earlier was Dr. Ben Carson talking to J.D. Hayworth, and lo and behold, here he is talking to who? Steve Maltzberg. Yeah. And lo and behold, after proving that he is an expert on Nazi communists and why what happened to Michael Brown happened in Ferguson, Missouri, turns out he's also an expert on NFL football players who one-punch knockout their soon-to-be wives. Take it away, Ben and Steve. As soon as the ad is over. Yeah. And goodbye. Here we go.
I don't know if you're aware of the Ray Rice situation. Have you been following that at all?
Yes, I saw that on the news this morning.
Yeah, well, he has now since been released after being suspended for two games by the league. Then the league subsequently changing its domestic policy, domestic abuse policy, saying they blew it on that suspension. They increased it to 6 games and then for life on a second offense. Today, because TMZ released that video, the Ravens within the hour have released him from his contract, and the league has adjusted its suspension from 2 games to indefinitely. Right move?
Well, I'm hopeful that they will get some help for him. You know, obviously, anyone who would do something like that needs some help.
Ben, Dr. Ben, if I may call you that, he's getting help. Because, see, unlike a lot of other people who punched their significant others into unconsciousness, Ray Rice was allowed pretrial diversion from, I think, a felony domestic abuse count. Yeah. If he attends anger management, domestic violence counseling for a solid year and manages not to get arrested for beating up any more women, well, he'll walk away scot-free, no charges, no convictions, no court costs, no nothing. So he's getting help. So that part's taken care of there, Dr. Ben.
And, you know, let's not all jump on the bandwagon of demonizing this guy. He obviously has some real problems.
Wow. And the right wing says it's the liberals who want to have psychological sensitivity sessions. Let's not all jump on the bandwagon demonizing him. Is it demonizing to suggest that maybe the NFL has a problem, that it sort of blithely tolerates this kind of conduct or has in the past? Last night, I think it was, Keith Olbermann over on his ESPN program straight up called for the resignation of Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL. And I don't necessarily think that that's a bad idea. But the larger point here is that I'm not aware of anyone demonizing Ray Rice. But in the misogynistic, woman-despising culture that is the right wing and the teabaggers and the Repiglican Party and the birthers and the deathers and the tempters and the booger eaters and the birchers and what have you, dealing with a guy, you know, I hope he gets some help. Now, this clip, thus far, 55 seconds long, and there's Dr. Ben Carson. I hope he gets some help. What about the woman he punched? Who was dragged out to the podium to apologize to the world for having hit her now husband Ray's fist with her face. Or her head. Or whatever. Nope. Nothing on that from Dr. Ben Carson, man of compassion. Nope. Nothing. Nada. Bupkis. Really.
I'm hopeful that they will get some help for him. You know, obviously, anyone who would do something like that needs some help. And, you know, let's not all jump on the bandwagon of demonizing this guy. He obviously has some real problems. And his wife obviously knows that because she subsequently married him. So they both need some help. And rather than just jumping on a punitive bandwagon, let's see if we can get some help for these people.
Wow. I mean, the Christ-like, inspiring compassion on display here. Yeah, it was a minute and 7 seconds into it before any mention was made of the woman that he knocked unconscious. Marty pointing out that Roger Goodell has apparently responded that he'll not be resigning. Well, hell no, he's not going to resign. He's the commissioner of a nonprofit organization that's worth billions. Would you resign? No, they're going to make it all better at the NFL. Jesus. B- breathtaking, the right-wing Titanic intellect. Just breathtaking. But it is Titanic Tuesday, and I don't want folks to think that I'm just going to camp out on Ben Carson. I'm not, because I've got some more Titanic intellect to play with. But for now, let's run back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Oh, lost the call. Dang it. What in the world is, what in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? And it's not phones, it's phone. Old habits die hard, you know. Let's try this again.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, welcome to the program. I just heard me say that.
Hello.
Hey, Edward.
Dang it.
Well.
Could you be so kind as to turn the radio down in the background there?
I did.
Okay, good.
Yes. Anyway, I was listening to you earlier and having a fit. What is wrong with this Ben Carson?
Well, no, what is wrong with America, Edward, that we don't recognize the genius of Ben Carson?
Well, maybe so. But anyway, what I want to know is why in the world did the people at Johns Hopkins hire him in the first place?
I dare not answer.
Well, I mean, there on the East Coast where I'm from, Johns Hopkins and Duke Hospital were the two big hospitals up in there. I mean, that's where you went if you were really sick.
Yeah.
So, mercy goodness. Anyway, I won't keep you. I just came across a little quote. I thought it would be good for Moran Monday or prayer meeting Wednesday.
Oh, goody.
Yeah. It's a quote from Robert Bolt. He was a screenwriter, a playwright, a author, and all that sort of stuff. And he said, a belief is not merely an idea the mind possesses. It is an idea that possesses the mind. And I think that's what's wrong with the fundamentalists.
That's nice.
Yeah. They have a belief that possesses their mind. So much for that.
And you don't even have to have a demon to be possessed. Just bad ideas are enough.
That's right. You got it. Well, why don't you pass me the strychnine and hand me a snake?
Absolutely. Let's get to rolling on the floor and speaking in some tongues.
Oh, yeah. And I remember when I was younger and I would go to these tent meetings of we call them holy rollers, which they were, and the women would get so sexually excited and everything, and when they got to sweating and everything and they'd get on the floor, which was covered in sawdust, and a little bit they looked like breaded pork chops.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I like breaded pork chops, but not the kind that they were serving.
No, that's the whole thing. I mean, a breaded pork cutlet, sure, but I think you've just kind of slandered the good name of the breaded pork cutlet.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I'm going to slap my wrist when I hang up and punish myself.
Only if you enjoy that sort of thing, Edward.
Take care. Enjoy talking with you.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Edward. You take care, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Edward calling from Dallas. The line is open, 304-574-8178. If you want to close out the evening with a bit of high-minded, highfalutin conversation, or if you want to just reach out Skype to Skype, which is always free, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. And just if you've never sent a contact request that way, just go right at it, and I'll approve the contact request, and we will be conversating. Note from Ron and Raleigh in answer to some of Edward's questions. Bob, Dr. Carson was the first pediatric surgeon to separate conjoined twins joined at the head that shared a part of their brains. So apparently he had some skill at some point in time, but as is the case with so many right-wing physicians, they should stick to what they're good at. Remember how if some say, Hollywood liberal speaks out on an issue, all the right-wingers say, shut up, shut up, shut up. He's liberal. He's just an actor, just an entertainer. He ain't got nothing to say, and he shut up. Well, that apparently does not apply if you're a right-winger who is out there opining on things about which you know near or absolutely nothing. Which kind of drags us over to another Titanic intellect. Yes, yes, yes. And I mean, granted, we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel here, and I could have saved this for prayer meeting Wednesday, but daggummit, we'll be up to our eyeballs in right-wing religion industry hatred by then anyway. No, no, no. This, of course, talk about desperate for attention. There's apparently some program out there called Vocal Point. What the fuck is that? Whose host is somebody named Jerry Newcomb. Who the hell is that? I never watched it. I guess somebody did. They paid him to do it for a while. Kevin Sorbo played Hercules, The Legendary Journeys. I can't recall even seeing so much as a scene of it, and I think I'm probably glad of it, because Kevin Sorbo is one of these right-wing evangelical religion industry weirdos, and he's also in the movie God's Not Dead, which probably brought in a lot more simpletons to buy tickets than, say, a more accurate title, God's Not Real, but who the hell am I? So, Jerry Newcomb and Kevin Sorbo got to talking. Now, bear in mind, if this had been some washed-up Hollywood type who was saying things like, you know what we need? We need universal single-payer health care, and I kind of like Barack Obama. Flush Flimball would be chewing up Oxycontins for the refreshing burst of flavor and screaming, my friends, he needs to shut up! He has nothing to say, that miserable liberal! But not so when it's sauce for the gander. Herewith, discussing things metaphysic, things Jesus-ish, things soul-stirring, I guess, Kevin Sorbo. Oh, my God. Anytime now.
And so I think Mel Gibson crashed a gate in a very big way 10 years ago.
He got attacked when he was shooting.
Wait, Mel Gibson crashed a gate? Was that when he was all drunked up and told the police officer who pulled him over for DUI? You know, it's the Jews! It's the Jews! The Jews got me all drunk. Jews. Jews did. Jews. Anyway, whatever.
Shooting the passion.
Yeah.
From the Jewish community saying, but look at the way you're portraying us. I mean, I go, oh, okay, news bulletin. You did kill Jesus.
Yeah, because, you know, that played so well for the last 2,000 years. Jews killed Christ. Let's kill Jews. The Jews poisoned our wells, and that's how we got the plague, because we're so goddamn medieval that we think that it's demonic if you learn science. And so we don't understand nothing about pathogens, nor fleas, nor cats, nor rats, nor bats, nor elephants, nor unicorns. Jews killed Christ. You know what? The Jews, you know what they do? They kidnap little Christian babies, and they grind them up, and they use their blood for their Passover matzah. That's what they do, Jews. It's called the blood libel. It goes back to the crucifixion and the Pilate scene and all of that and supposedly the elders of the temple saying, "Let his blood be upon our heads." They've been living with the Romans for a while. Nobody in their right mind says that. That's one of those things that gets inserted into the Gospels to explain away the fact that, oh my God, we could be on this for the rest of the evening. But there was a breach in the early church between the Jesus church, which was located at Jerusalem and was headed by Jesus' brother James, and Peter. And they were trying to follow Yeshua's teachings and yet at the same time be good Jews. They were following the law. Everybody had had their penis mutilated. You know, all the stuff that matters. All the guys, that is. And they were, you know, they weren't eating shellfish or wearing polycotton microfiber blends or any of that stuff. And they were, you know, paying whatever they had to pay to have a pigeon squished for a blood offering to the all-loving, all-kind Jehovah, whatever. Meanwhile, you've got this former temple cop, as far as we can tell, whose name was Saul, but he went on the lam, and he changed his name to Paul because it didn't quite sound so Jewish, you know, because, you know, the Romans, they'd had Pauls for a while. Aemilius Paulus was a great general, I do believe. So it's a marketing angle. And he's going into the Greek cities of Asia Minor and onto into the Greek mainland churches there on the Peloponnese and the Attic Peninsula. And he's saying, listen, the only thing that matters about Jesus is that he got crucified and got all dead, and then he got up and walked around and he went off to heaven. Never mind all the stuff about not eating pulled pork barbecue. We all know how good it is. Don't you worry about it. Because it was going to be creating a new church in a place like the Roman Empire where there was a whole lot of pulled pig barbecue being eaten, not to mention their upper class's abiding love and everybody else's abiding love of oysters. And then there's the rotten fish sauce called garum, which I just can't imagine would be dietarily acceptable. I mean, they've excavated these rotten fish sauce factories, and I think after 2,500 years, they still stink. But, I mean, the Romans couldn't get enough garum. The riverbed in around the ancient portions of the French town Arles is littered with amphorae, you know, clay jars, which were used to transport, in some cases, fish sauce, garum. The closest you can get to that stuff is probably the really skank rotten fish sauce that you can, which has a surprisingly delightful flavor when it's cooked into stuff, in Thai cuisine and Vietnamese. And maybe that's the same way garum worked. And there were different grades, and people, you know, no, God damn it, the garum from Naples is better than Neapolis. No, I prefer the garum from Brundisium. Wow, how did I get there? Oh, okay, diet. So Paul has this problem. Two things. The Romans liked to eat a wide variety of food, and the Greeks too, really, including pork and shellfish. And they also found the idea of chopping away at a baby's penis to be pretty disgusting. And so Paul, who was absolutely alight with the fervor of spreading the good news of eternal life and Jesus is coming back and yeah, he's gonna bring some of his angelic buddies, and they're gonna kick some ass, man. And it was all gonna happen in that generation, only it didn't. And so he's got this problem of trying to sell this magnificent good news story that he's got. If at the same time he's telling everybody, you know, adult men even, that they got to go out and mutilate their penises and can't have a goddamn shrimp anymore. So they come into conflict. And guess who wins? Well, at some point in time, the locals got mad enough at James that they threw him off a wall or something and killed him. And the Jerusalem branch of Christianity sort of fell apart. And the Pauline branch, with all of its hip, new, non-penis mutilating and eat all you want, you know, there'll be more, it took the day. And so as the Bible develops over time, you get the insertion of the or just the outright invention of this notion of let his blood be upon our heads and that of our children. It's an after-the-fact justification, but it's not like it hasn't been seen before. It's not like there's not a history of it. For instance, you know, we've talked at length from time to time about good old Lot, who, Paul, by the way, notes somewhere along the way, I think it was Paul, Lot was a righteous man. Righteous dude. It was Lot who offered up his daughters to be raped. Yeah, he did. At his abode in Sodom and or Gomorrah. Mm-hmm. And so having offered them up to be raped, well, when they escape the destruction of Sodom and Lot's wife gets turned into a pillar of salt, now you just have to take this stuff on faith. No, really. Because she turned around to look back at Sodom, thinking, did I bring the good silver? Wait, I'm sure we forgot something. Oh, salt. Because God is a loving God. Well, there's nobody left but Lot and his daughters, and they hole up in a cave, and the daughters look at each other and say, yea, verily, daddy's done got all the good men killed. And after all, yea, verily, forsooth, we have done had the bejesus raped out of us, because daddy thought better of some strangers who knocked on the door. So tell you what, we ain't never going to have a husband. Let's get daddy liquored up, and let's jump his old bones and make his member jump like a snake in the microwave that will 2,000 years, 3,000, 4,000 years hence be invented. And elder sister, you jump daddy first, and then tomorrow night I'll jump daddy's withered old bones, and we'll both get pregnant. And that way we'll have a family to support us after we're done raising the children, and there's really not a lot of logic in that. This they then did. But the best part of all of this is that all of this is offered up not as a way of showing that Lot was a righteous man, because it's my understanding that even the rabbis go, ha-ha, Lot was, no, this is not righteous. No, it's the verse there in Deuteronomy, or no, it's in Genesis, where he says, and thus were born Norblap and Blue Pop. And Norblap was the father of the Moabites, and Blue Pop was the father of the Ammonites, who are blah, 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 blah. Well, it's an after-the-fact justification that comes back, because by the time this is all being written down, a little old bit of genocide has already been practiced against the Ammonites and the Moabites, and they need an alibi. Ah, see, I mean, they were incest kids. Right? Sure. Really? And so that same after-the-fact kind of stuff is going on with Paul when he's out there creating, inventing Christianity as we understand it. And however long it took me to express all of that, that is exactly how much time contemplating all of this BS Kevin Sorbo has never spent. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Now, wait a minute. Pretending for a moment that Jesus actually existed, didn't the Romans kill Yeshua? Sneezing fit number 3. Yes, the Romans did kill Yeshua, Ron. P.S. Ron asks, what does Hercules know from Yeshua? Bupkis. But that's okay, because Kevin Sorbo is, you know, he's a traditional family values Christian. And all traditional family values Christian understand that the Jews killed Christ.
Come on,
well, they delivered him over to the Romans, right.
Exactly.
Yeah, the goober Nukem or whatever, Duke Nukem, Radio Hour, offers a bit of a fig leaf there for him. Well, I mean, they handed him over to be killed by the Romans. I mean, yeah.
Well, okay, news bulletin, you did kill Jesus. Come on, guys.
Well, they delivered him over to the Romans, right.
Exactly, they did deliver him over. So they had a hand in it. And, of course, what did it do? Well, a $30 million movie made, what, $500 million. So Mel sort of had the last laugh there.
I love right-wing Christianity's focus on the money. Never mind 2,000 years of Jewish persecution. Oh, no. No, no. Never mind Holocausts and pogroms and Cossacks and the ginned-up protocols of the learned elders of Zion that are being circulated even unto this day. Never mind all that. And the movie about it made $500 million. So Mel Gibson got the last laugh. You see why I decided to use this for Titanic Tuesday? Yeah, I thought so. Oh, God, I love the chat room. Somebody pulled up one of my favorite lines. Well, here we are, Pismo Beach, and all the clams we can eat. Well, it looks like we're going to be starting, unless something dramatic happens in the next 34 minutes, looks like we're going to be starting tomorrow in a $285 hole. We're still trying to raise $135 of the fundraising goal for this evening, and it would be lovely if we could. Everyone and anyone is welcome to chime in, jump in, help out, whatever, you know, however you choose, because holes are a booger to climb out of. I mean, we're still climbing out of last week's. But, so, PayPal button, traditional U.S. Postal Service mail, however, but this is entirely listener-supported, no doubt about it. Marty writing in, assuming the Jews did kill Christ, use the correct nomenclature, wasn't Christ supposed to be Jewish? Well, yes. But, no, the larger point, and you're kind of assuming there, but the larger point is that, oh, well, never mind. Let's put it this way. If the crucifixion happened, well, okay, lots of crucifixions happened. And when they happened, it was a uniquely Roman form of punishment that was used for treason, crimes against the state, that kind of thing. And the people who drove the nails and set the crossbeams up and dropped the posts in the ground and all, every last one of them was a Roman, most usually Roman soldiers. We tend, as I've noted before, to forget that there were tens of thousands of crucifixions in the ancient world, and we only deem one to be important. But the nails were driven by Romans and Roman soldiers. So, yes, the Romans, they crucified Christ, they crucified pirates, they crucified rebellious slaves. Crucified, 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 crucified. Hell, if you look back to the history, I think crucifixion is only banned as a form of punishment during or after the reign of Constantine, which is way up into the 4th century of the Common Era. Now, you would think that with the rise of Orthodox Christianity, and you know, there are a bunch of heresies involved, Arian, yada, 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 you would think that they might go, hey, let's not do that thing that they did to our Lord and Savior anymore. Because if we didn't like it being done to them, maybe it shouldn't be done to them. No, they just couldn't quite get around to it. Titanic Tuesday can be a little rough. But it is Titanic Tuesday, and therefore we have to slog along herewith. Now, most of us are aware, and I think Randy mentioned it in an email last night, the debate on the response to Citizens United constitutional amendment that will go forward. I think a vote will be taken on Friday in the Senate of the United States. In an attempt to try to take some of the influence of filthy right-wing money out of politics, and arguably left-wing money. It's just that we don't really have enough to. It's like here's our penny. We'll compare that as being absolutely fundamentally equal to the billions of dollars that the right wing what did I see? 44,000. Don't quote me on this, but it's just some lunatic number. The number of filthy right wing attack ads that the Koch brothers have funded this election cycle. And even at the ridiculous amount of money that they're spending, they can't spend themselves broke. So this doesn't even hurt in the pocketbook. But anyway, so that debate is going to be had through the week, and I guess there will be a vote at the end of the week. And it should be interesting to follow. It was introduced by Democrat Tom Udall and endorsed by all people by former Senator Alan Simpson of Wyoming, a Republican. The right wing is not happy. When are they ever? Oh, my God. Just listen to the language. I get these emails from Levi Russell. Levi is lrussell@afphq.org. Area code 703-224-3200. Americans for Prosperity. They don't say whose prosperity. Dateline, Arlington, Virginia. AFP responds to Senate leadership's attempts to undercut free speech. SJ Res 19 would censor the voices of millions of concerned citizens. Millions concerned. Now, how are we gonna silence the voices of millions of concerned citizens? SJ Res 19, a joint resolution proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States relating to contributions and expenditures intended to affect elections. Oh, that sounds like free speech is just dead. But at any rate, Americans for Prosperity is pissed. Today, Americans for Prosperity released a statement regarding efforts in the U.S. Senate to pass a constitutional amendment that would change the First Amendment
fundamentally alter the Bill of Rights and undercut Americans' rights to free speech.
Really? It does all that? You'll be damned. And I thought it just got the filthy money out of politics.
Money is speech. It's the best kind of speech. It's the only speech there is. And if we pass this, then I won't have this phony baloney job, says Levi Russell.
AFP Director of Policy Mac Zimmerman said the following.
This proposed constitutional amendment is the latest example of Washington politicians using their positions of power to silence those who disagree with them. The First Amendment exists to protect the rights of citizens to make their voices heard on important public policy issues, but Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and his allies in Congress would rather have those voices go unheard. If this amendment passes, those voices will be carried off to Obama's FEMA concentration camps, where they'll have to drink Soylent for the rest of their days, and where muzzles to keep them from talking about our Kenyan Muslim usurper, who certainly will not step down. No, none of that's in there. It's just that when you start doing the outraged teabagger voice, you get kind of possessed. No, it's the second paragraph that's good. That's extra super double plus good fun. Because, see, S.J. Rez doesn't do anything that is said in the first paragraph. Silence those who disagree with them. But it's the entire Senate. I mean, doesn't this thing have bipartisan support? And Levi Russell and Mac Zimmerman, you dumbasses, what makes you think they're listening now? The only thing, as far as I can tell, the only listening being done is to these commercials and the campaign contributions that are provided by the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelman, whatever, and that guy who said women need to keep aspirins between their knees, you know. Sweet suffering Jeebus. I mean, they can't just say we don't like this because we're paid not to like it, because that would be a little too transparent. But paragraph two, this is the real Lulu. I mean, this is the go get the big butterfly net paragraph. Americans are getting crushed by a broken health care system, skyrocketing national debt, and burdensome regulations instead of investing taxpayer resources into limiting the free speech of concerned citizens. The Senate should be focused on finding real solutions to the government-created problems that are wreaking havoc on the lives of small businesses and working families.
Notice how small businesses comes before working families? Now, notice how all the problems are government-created. They're not created by those darling little victims in the free market wonderland. Oh, hell no.
Crushed by a broken health care system.
Really? Crushed? Well, I mean, we could go back to Carol in Aliquippa last night. Yeah, possibly. Healthcare system.
Skyrocketing national debt.
Wait. I thought the deficit was falling like a paralyzed falcon. Because it is. I thought we were adding jobs, not losing them. Granted, the unemployment rate's still 6.1%, but that's a damn sight better than it was, say, toward the end of Dim Leader's bold and brilliant presidential term.
burdensome regulations. You know, burdensome regulations like forbidding insurance companies to discriminate against people with pre-existing conditions. Burdensome regulations. Oh, no, that's that CO2 stuff. We're burdening the coal industry. Even though more and more mountaintop removal permits are granted almost daily. We're burdening the oil industry, even though bomb trains are rolling out of North Dakota at a jaunty clip. We're burdening the natural gas industry, even though places like Pennsylvania are being and North Dakota and other states are being fracked within an inch of its life. Burdensome regulations that don't even exist! There's no federal law against fracking. Barack Obama is the, whether we, and most of us don't like it, Barack Obama is the drill baby drill president. His administration is allowing, we're about to become, no kidding, the number one producer of oil and gas in the world. Yay, we're cooking the planet! Well, I mean, no. Yay, we're making the planet unfit for human habitation. Yay! As this legislation moves forward for debate, we encourage all senators to reject this misguided and brazen attempt to attempt... Didn't really get out of the drafting committee there. This misguided and brazen attempt to restrict the rights of millions of Americans. Really, it's an attempt to attempt? Isn't that a tacit admission on the part of Levi Russell over there at Americans for Prosperity that this isn't even a thing? I mean, if it there's attempt to, and that means you're actually doing something, but when you get to attempt to, at that point in time, you're admitting that it's just a fantasy in your in the thin gray settlings of your fevered little brain that's there, there's a life support system for your amygdala. Oh, Jesus, Titanic Tuesday can be rough. Here's the amendment, by the way. Thank you, Randy, for sending this along via our buddy Rick Smith. To advance democratic self-government and political equality and to protect the integrity of government and the electoral process, Congress and the states may regulate and set reasonable limits on the raising and spending of money by candidates and others to influence elections. That's raising of money. Don't see anything in there about silencing millions of voices of concerned citizens. Interesting. Congress, part two. Congress and the states shall have power to implement and enforce this article by appropriate legislation and may distinguish between natural persons and corporations or other artificial entities created by law, including by prohibiting such entities from spending money to influence elections. Once again, not a goddamn word in there about anybody silencing any poor little teabaggers. Except for this. But for the millions and millions of dollars that the right wing has used to create and sustain the teabaggers, well, the people who have teabagger jobs will have to go out and find honest work. 3. Nothing in this article should be construed to grant Congress or the states the power to abridge the freedom of the press. Well, hello? Oh, so, okay, wait a minute. Is there a takeaway here? I mean, is there a clear and easy takeaway? Why, yes, there is. Levi Russell at Americans for Prosperity and Max Zimmerman at Americans for Prosperity, a wholly owned subsidiary of Koch Industries, are liars! Yeah, I'll be dipped. By the way, thanks to Glenn for jumping in there and helping with the fundraising this evening. That was badly needed and much appreciated. We are now down to only $125 to go for this evening's fundraising activities. And a note coming in from Sparky, who is willing to extend the Ghost Pepper and or Pistachios Challenge. For the next $100 contribution that comes in, Sparky will, of his own accord and his own free will, provide you with your choice of a package of smoky ghost pepper cheese, which is hotter than hell in August, assuming that hell is in the northern hemisphere, of course. I don't know what that would be in Australia. Sorry, Robert. And by the way, this is a domestic offer only inside the continental United States because Sparky ships United States Postal Service priority mail. That's a free plug because we like the Postal Service. But anybody who kicks in $100 has your choice of a courtesy of Sparky, a package of free, smoky ghost pepper cheese. I melted a slice of that, a whole slice, in a can of otherwise nondescript canned chili, and ate most of it, and used a little bit of leftover to peel paint off the wall, just to see if it would work, and it did. No, it's delicious, the smoky ghost pepper cheese, or the jalapeno pistachios, which are also delightful, and a number of people can attest to that. And I think Tim from L.A. can attest to the heat of the smoky ghost pepper cheese as well. So it's out there, a $100 contribution, which will get us all but $25 toward our fundraising goal for the evening. A $100 contribution gets you a package from Sparky. By the way, notes coming in, Robert in Australia, subject line, this whole the Jews killed Yeshua thing. One thing I could never work out, Bob. Wasn't Yeshua meant to die, had to die, so we could all be forgiven for our sins? Well, yes, that is one of the troubling parts. But understand that Christianity was not founded by intellectual giants. It was founded by people who were baffled by wheelbarrows. I don't understand those two things in the front. I mean, they get stuck in the sand when we try to push it, right? Yeah, I mean, it's all foreordained, got to happen. The New Testament's full of attempts to make prophecy line up with Yeshua's life, and yeah. And Robert continues, so if Judas had not betrayed Yeshua, and if the priests of the temple hadn't handed Yeshua over to the Romans for execution, what would have happened to him dying for our sins? He would not have died, which would leave us where exactly? In a much better place, but that's just my opinion. But again, this is all ex post facto reasoning, which naturally is suspect. Actually, it's wholly corrupt. But it's part of the created backstory. Robert continues, it seems the Jews are being blamed for something Yeshua, God, did to himself. Well, there's that. How did Bill Maher put it, Robert says? It's a suicide mission. Yeshua planned to die, had to die, and did, and it's his own fault. That's his daddy's fault. Diane in Kansas stand with an observation. All the infantile ideas about the Christ from the right-wingers pale in the face of Dostoevsky's account of the church in the form of the Inquisitor rejecting Christ upon his return because he was no longer needed by the church. That's what I took away from the Brothers Karamazov long ago. That would be the real miracle. Just a thought. I hadn't thought about that. That is a takeaway from the Brothers Karamazov. Which is sort of a counterpoint to what... who was the author of The Last Temptation of Christ, also wrote Zorba the Greek? At one point, he has Paul explaining to Jesus, listen, if you hadn't died on the cross, we would have invented you anyway. So on the one hand, you've got Dostoevsky saying, he's not really necessary anymore. We've got the whole structure up here. We can get by. And you've got the guy whose name I can't remember saying, if it wasn't you, it would have been somebody else. We would have invented it. Because they kind of invented the whole thing anyway. Stockton Leary with a good observation. So if Jesus died for our sins, shouldn't we get busy sinning to make it more worthwhile? Yeah, you'd hate for the whole thing to just go to waste. And then this, a response from Scott in Sweden to an inquiry from our buddy Patrick in Germany, with which we will kind of wrap up the program.
Scott writes, the news of Islamic gangs taking over the streets in Malmo was certainly a shocker to me. I have the feeling that some problems have been magnified or slanted in the telling, or the retelling. There is, of course, cross-cultural tension, and there are youth gangs of every persuasion, but that the streets have been taken over seems exaggerated by an order of magnitude or two. I called my buddy Gusta in Malmo, who was just as surprised about the claim as I was. He says things have been very calm recently and wonders where this news comes from. I was forced to mention the horn. This is not to say that Sweden or Malmo do not have strife. Local incidents happen, maybe not as drastically as in Ferguson, and tempers flare, rumors spread, past legitimate grudges are remembered, and things can either eventually calm down or boil over. When things boil over in Sweden, Malmo is a prime site. It does have a history. Oh, good God, no, not a history. Because when something in Europe has a history, you know, it goes back a ways. Malmo is in southernmost Sweden, in a region that was conquered from the Danes a few hundred years ago. A good old sectarian blood spilling many generations ago leaves a ringing echo a long time. The U.S. Northern War of Aggression, see what he did there, is only a paltry five or six generations old. The Dano-Swedish War had a brutal local civil war element along the then frontier. The losers carried a generational chip that still mutates and smolders. Southern Sweden, Småland, is kind of Sweden's Bible Belt and its redneck belt. The worst of the racist groups always have their origin in southernmost Sweden. When immigration from the south began several decades ago, first with the Greeks, followed by the southern Slavs, then eastern Slavs, then diverse Islamic groups, well, here could be found most of the pro-Nazis in the 1930s. A few decades ago, when Yugoslavia was blasted apart, Slavic refugees washed up in southern Sweden and had proxy gangs that fought each other for about a decade. This sad region had violent motorcycle gang wars, the Bandidos and the Hells Angels. Really, Sweden has the Hells Angels? In the 1980s, with enough late-night shootings and ambushes to make a good B-movie. Then came the drug gangs, both ethnic Swede and immigrant. As the Bandidos and Hells Angels were suppressed, the vacuum is now being filled by an all-races-welcome Dutch motorcycle gang, Saterdara. Naturally, being all-races-welcome, the Swedish neo-Nazis paint them as all-immigrant. Extreme right-wingers have been brutal to immigrants, and immigrant youth have banded together to push back. Naturally, provocation creates retribution, and before long, one gets bad gang action on both sides. Remember Anders Breivik in Norway? Sadly, he's not a one-off. He had predecessors in Sweden, too. In the Stockholm area is John Ausonius, who got his kicks 20 years ago shooting immigrants. This SOB was the inspiration for Malmoite Peter Mangs, a native Swede right-winger who intentionally shot up immigrant gangs a few years ago, trying to make it appear that rival immigrant gangs were behind it all in order to create ethnic immigrant gang warfare. Mangs was effective. He created havoc and bloody feuds. By the way, Scott includes links to all of these things. I just want to make sure that we get to the core of things. Otherwise, I'd be sharing that as well. Naturally, right-wingers hyped the meme of immigrant gangs being out of control and warring on each other while it was happening. Then after Mangs was caught and confessed, the right began calling him the right-winger do-gooder who only targeted criminal immigrant gang leaders to free the country of them. Free. Yeah. Like the old saying about paranoid, sometimes there really is someone out to get you. With the far right playing agent provocateur, the worst inner tendencies of many youths are fired up on all sides. And with the periodic Israel-Palestine fuel for the local fires, tensions seldom cool before something sets off a new round. Just recently, some flying monkeys went out in a knifing spree of dark-skinned people. Also, Malmo just happens to be a center of Jewish population as well, their initial population there being much augmented by being the first best place of refuge before and during World War II. Remains the first best place of refuge in Sweden for Arabs currently. Malmo is sort of our Ellis Island. The good news is that even after all this, whenever the neo-Nazis try to capitalize on the fear and anger and hold a recruitment drive or demonstration, they're usually outnumbered by well over 100 to 1. Swedish youth turn out in huge numbers to shout down these thugs, run Google Translate on an anti-Nazi website, link, and some pics. They're there. There are two neo-Nazi parties in Sweden, one real hardcore that takes the most heat, and a softcore, the Swedish Democrats. Damn, that just sounds downright banal. Who are now in parliament and in local town councils. The Swedish Democrats' front men and a few women nationally are in their 30s and are the good haircut suits you'd expect, but their support base are largely like the Tea Party, aging, frightened whites. Think of how Rand Paul is supposed to be the youth attractor for the Tea Party, and you get the demographics of the Swedish Democrats about right. Will they have staying power? There was a Ross Perot-like white right-wing party in the 1980s that flourished a decade, and it's now gone. Time will tell if the Swedish Democrats will follow them. You really can't hang Swedish in front of a word and expect anybody to think it's bad, Scott. I mean, I'm not disputing with you on the topicality here, but, I mean, if they wanted to market that god-awful fish in the United States, and I'm not talking about Swedish fish, I'm talking about Sjöströmming. If they put Swedish in front of it, people would actually buy it. Oh, really? Like Swedish meatballs? Yeah. Swedish fish? Time will tell if the Swedish Democrats follow them. They're not really housebroken, and other party work with them openly in Parliament. Coalitions are built without them. To conclude, as for Islamic gangs ruling Malmo, they exist, they are angry, they can be brutal, are largely a reaction to prolonged right-wing nativist provocation, but they have not taken over the city. They're an occasional news item, which in the way of media flashes on the screen, and are blown way out of proportion by the right-wing internet trolls. Does anyone remember Irish, Italian, and other ethnic gangs in the U.S. once upon a time? Once established, it will take time for assimilation to begin to ease things. Motorcycle gangs are a nasty joker in this mix, but still, so far, most Swedes have enough sense of history to get out in the streets for tolerance and unity. Our inner caveman, the tribalist, is a hard nut to crack, but they're not the majority. Signed, our buddy Scott. And then this, by way of a question at the end of the program, and responses are welcome via email or perhaps tomorrow night. P.S. Here's a return question for the hornies. I was talking to my mom in Ohio over the telephone, and she has a groundhog infestation under the back porch. She heard from friends that the thing to do was to go to a swimming pool supply store and get a bottle of chlorine and chuck it down the hole. Now, maybe I'm just seeing the dark side of the U.S., and a lot of that is your doing, Bob, but being the centenary of World War I and all, has America really reverted to gassing them out of their trenches and dugouts? My mother will be awaiting a better, less final solution, please. Thank you, Scott. Anybody who wants to chime in on under the back porch groundhog problems, send me your emails, bobkincaid@gmail.com, or post it over on my Facebook page, or shoot it to me on Twitter, @bobkincaid, because we do like to be a help when it's at all possible for us to be a help in this little old community, our Horn Family Commune congregation. So there we are at the end of this Titanic Tuesday. Thanks, one and all, for joining in the conversation, your emails, your participation. Even just sitting there and listening and occasionally pounding the furniture, the steering wheel, whatever, you know, don't hurt yourself. That counts, because this is community. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to everybody who helps us financially keep all of this going. Remember Dr. Bill at 1 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow? He'd love your participation, you know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Y'all have a great night. Bye now.